Welcome back to the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. My pleasure now to be joined by Brandon Kiley, ESPN 101 in St. Louis. He is on the Mizzou beat. Brandon, thanks for taking the time.
It's always a pleasure, Danny. Appreciate you having me on.
All right. Well, you can thank Rob. I wouldn't have had you on if I was, it was up to me. No. Anyway, let's talk last night. Obviously, it didn't go the way that Missouri would have wanted in any way, shape, or form, start to finish. Let's talk about the game first, then we'll get into the cloak and dagger we've got going on there. The first two games maybe raised a little bit of a false expectation as far as them being able to just sort of cruise along without Michael Porter Jr. and maybe gave them a little bit too much confidence, or was it just a matter of a bunch of hideous shooting?
I think maybe all the above is that it's always probably the correct answer.
Right.
It sounds a little bit like a cop-out. I think the biggest thing last night was that they just missed their shots, right? And some of that is because they took contested shots. They didn't have a whole lot of movement. It looked from basically the jump of the ball, they just didn't have a lot of energy, which is always strange when you're going out on the road against a legitimate Power 5 team and the first time of the year that you're able to do that. You would have expected them to come out with a little bit more oomph, but they just didn't have it. And then right away, Jeremiah Tillman picks up a foul. He leaves the game, and we knew going into it that was going to be a problem for him. But then it just kept happening, and Jeremiah Tillman fouls out after just 6 minutes. He's now fouled out in each of his last two games, playing a total of 16 minutes, so 10 fouls in 16 minutes. Not ideal by any stretch for your best player right now. And then the team just wasn't able to make up for it. They didn't have any inside presence defensively. Their rotations were off. And at the end of the game, that's what it should look like when you play like that. So I think it was a bit of a wake-up call for both the players and for fans that, look, there's going to be nights like this, especially when Michael Porter Jr. is not playing. When you go up against high major competition, there are still serious flaws with this roster. They're a good team, but against a team like Utah that's able to expose you like that, sometimes that happens.
Well, let's talk about the missing link here, Michael Porter Jr. I just don't understand what's going on. I don't understand it from the standpoint of it doesn't seem like it could be a serious injury, but we don't know. And the other part is that Missouri is just being so non-transparent about the whole thing. All it does is create a narrative where we have to sit around and speculate and just dream things up as possibilities. I think this is an awkward situation being handled poorly.
Yeah, I think the big problem was the Wagner game, right? Because you have ESPN on their big ESPN2 platform. Throughout the game, their broadcasters are saying, well, Michael Porter Jr. is not only not playing tonight, but he's not on the bench. And then they added to that, we don't know why he's not on the bench. And that's where the speculation really began to go rampant, and it was fair speculation.
Yeah.
And fair reason to question, why is this happening? Why aren't they handling this correctly? And they never really answered any of those questions. And look, I don't necessarily think they handled the Utah game poorly. They told us in the morning, hey, look, Michael Porter Jr. was not on the plane. We're going to reevaluate him soon, and we'll hope that he's back. He's day-to-day. That's fine. That's typically what you'd expect from an update from a college for an injury. The problem is Michael Porter Jr. is not just any injury. Michael Porter Jr. is the number one player in the country who changed the dynamic of the program. He changed everything when it came to Mizzou basketball. And so you have to treat this thing a little bit differently. And that's why fans are treating it differently. There's been national outlets. CBSSports.com right now has a story on their main page about the mystery of Michael Porter Jr.'s injury. If you're Mizzou, you've got to shut that down. You've got to be able to come out and say, look, here's what's happening. It's a blank injury, and it happened at blank time, and we're expecting him to be out for however long. We're going to reevaluate this thing. We hope he's back for the Orlando tournament. If that's not the case, we're going to take this thing easy, and we'll try to get him back for bragging rights. So I don't know. They haven't handled this particularly well. I didn't think they handled the Utah game as poorly as they did the Wagner game, but once they handled the Wagner game the way they did, everything else just kind of snowballs from there.
Well, and then they said, well, he was more comfortable in the locker room than he would have been on the bench. Frankly, I don't even think he was in the locker room, and that's just me. But
he was. That's been confirmed. He was in the locker room. Yeah.
Well, that's just absurd. Unless the guy's in a wheelchair, how you can't, you know, create a little room for him at the end of the bench. There has been, you know, we've talked about this on the show the other day that, you know, maybe they're not happy with how he's handling the injury, and they didn't want him sitting on the bench and being the entire story. You know, showing him 52 times and then talking about him and not playing and everything else. Like, no, you go sit in the locker room and we're going to concentrate on the guys who can play.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the case. I think ultimately it might just be this. It might be the case where he got hurt. They wanted him to play. He played a little bit against Iowa State and realized, I just can't do this. And one of the things that I noticed against Iowa State in the 2 minutes that he was on the court, he was running funny. Like, one of the things about Michael Porter Jr. is he's super smooth as an athlete. When he plays, he glides across the court, and that's one of the things that makes him so spectacular to watch. He didn't look that way against Iowa State. It just looked strange and odd, and then he goes out, and of course we now find out that there was an injury there. If he is hurt, and if it is not serious, mid injury where, whether it's the back, the hip, the knee, whatever the injury is, you make sure he's 100% when he comes
right
back. The bench thing was strange. The way that they handled that entire Wagner game was strange to me. But otherwise, everything else since then, if we simply like deleted that from our memory, which is impossible to do, of course, but if we deleted the Wagner game from our memory, everything else about it makes a little bit of sense. The update after the Iowa State game, hey, he's day-to-day. The fact that they told us 24 hours before the Utah game, hey, he's not making this trip, he's not going to be here for this, we're going to continue to update you day to day. All of that makes sense. It was the Wagner game that was handled poorly and continues to be the storyline here.
Doug Gottlieb is a regular contributor on this show, and he used the phrase soft for Michael Porter. He said, everybody knows he's kind of soft. You've been around him now. Is there that kind of a narrative with him? And is there the possibility that Konzo Martin, who's anything but soft, at least in demeanor, is disappointed with the way this is going?
I don't want to speculate either way. So is it possible? Sure, it's possible. I don't think it's a fair label to Michael Porter Jr. to say that he's soft. So I don't think that's fair. It was something that traveled with him throughout the AAU circuit when he was younger. I think he's kind of grown out of that, though. And I think if you talk to like NBA scouts or the people who were around the recruiting circuits, they would tell you the same thing. That was something that was the case for a while, but I don't think that's really followed him anymore. So I would say that's an unfair term, unfair label for Michael Porter Jr. at this point, but it was something that followed him at one point.
Finally, on basketball, out of the guys, you mentioned Tillman and his foul trouble, so obviously that's been a little disappointing. But what have been the good things and maybe the surprisingly not so good things of the rest of the crew so far?
So I would say one of the good things, one of the positives, but up until last night, Jontay didn't have a great game last night, but Jontay Porter was spectacular in the second game of the year, and he looks like a kid, despite being just turning 18. He looks like somebody who can give you 20 good minutes a night as opposed to somebody that you were just hoping could maybe get you to 15 minutes, and that's going to be big. A guy who's 6'10", 6'11", has a pretty good-sized body for being just a freshman and a guy who should be a senior in high school right now. He's skilled. He can rebound. He can pass out of the post. Jontay Porter is probably one of the biggest surprises of the year. I would say one of the biggest disappointments is the point guard position, because it doesn't seem like they really have one right now. They're going with Cassius Robertson, the JUCO, or the grad transfer, rather. And he's never played point guard before in his entire life, not on the AAU circuit, not in middle school, not in elementary school. He's always been a two guard, and they're playing him at the point. He's been fine. Not, I wouldn't say great, but he's been fine there. I fully expected that position to end up at some point this year going to Blake Harris, and instead he's really kind of barely played so far this year. 8 minutes, 3 minutes, and 15 minutes in his three games so far. I expected him to be a bigger contributor, and I'm hoping that that's going to be the case as we get further along in the season.
What's interesting is they have some real games coming up. I mean, for instance, Kansas played Kentucky the other day, and they got nothing until the conference, basically. But they've got some real games. This is a schedule that, you know, I mean, none of them are, you know, marquee games, and but real basketball games where you probably are going to be able to learn something and know something about the team from them being played.
Yeah, late next week they've got this Orlando trip, and I think this is good for Mizzou. They're going to go to Orlando, and the first game in that one is against Long Beach State. That's a nothing burger. That one doesn't matter. But if they win that, and they should, they'll play St. John's most likely. And St. John's is a real basketball program with a pretty good team this year. If they were somehow to be able to pull that one out, they would very likely end up playing West Virginia in the championship game of that tournament, which, as you guys know, in Kansas City, is the Big 12 being there. That's a really, really good test for a team that has some point guard questions. So with that press going up against Mizzou, that's one that I would really like to see early in the season. And then after that, it opens up again until Bragging Rights, and that's coming up in late December. But that's another good game that should be a good test against Underwood's defense and the style of play that he has going on at Illinois.
Well, I joked earlier that we have six local sports programs basically going on right now, Kansas State, Missouri, and basketball and football, so six. And only two are kind of, the waters are quiet right now. One is Kansas State basketball. That's just because they're dull and nobody cares that much. And shockingly, Missouri football, which, you know, obviously is anything but. And now tomorrow faces a different challenge. The winning streak has all been in home games, and they head out for Vanderbilt. They probably actually have the luxury now, after the devastatingly bad start, of not succeeding here in the final part of the season and it not being a crusher. And if they do succeed, it just continues an incredibly nice narrative.
Yeah, and I fully expect them to succeed. I mean, I think in the last two games of the season, they're playing arguably the two worst teams in the SEC. I mean, Arkansas, I don't know how much you guys have been able to watch lately, but they are awful. I mean, that's a really bad football team. And then who they play this week, and Vanderbilt, everybody that watched the game for Mizzou last week saw what they did on the ground against Tennessee. Vanderbilt's defense against the run is almost as bad, if not every bit as bad, as Tennessee's. So Drew Locke's been the storyline for good reason. His numbers this year are ridiculous. But the ground game's really what I think is going to be able to win them these next couple of games against Vandy and Arkansas. And I would take a little bit of question with one thing you said, that it would be okay if they drop one of these games. I think they kind of need to win these two games. These are two teams that are really bad, and if you're the team that we think that you've been over the last 4 or 5 weeks, you should be able to go into both Vanderbilt and Arkansas and pull off two wins.
Oh, I think they should be able to win, too. I guess what my point was, it was seen as so bad that now they've kind of, you know, gotten it steady to the point where, yeah, it would be disappointing if they dropped either or both of these games. But still, it would be 5-7 after it looked like the coach was going to get fired for sure. So I guess that's where I was going. I would deem it a bit of a disappointment here in the end. And 2 consecutive years of a losing record, if they didn't get either one of them, certainly would raise questions, but maybe not where they were at 1-5. So it has been amazing, and the amazing thing has not just been that they started to win these games, but the fashion they won them the last couple of times. But it has created this strange narrative that we've seen where, I think it was Curtis on the show here who maybe said that many Missouri fans had already divorced Barry Odom, and now he's still in the house, and and so they don't know quite what to think. And in the end, you could also see a scenario where this just laid out so perfectly that they almost had to win these games, even if they were just showing anything. And 2 years down the road, we're going to look back and go, oh, my God, why did that stretch pop up where they got it? We're all fired coaches and substandard teams in the middle of the season, and it was just a pure run of good fortune for Barry Odom, and now we're stuck with him.
It's in play that happens. So there's a few things here. I'll go down a couple of different points. First of all, the schedule has absolutely been advantageous. There's no question about that. But you guys know this, having been around whatever team it may be, whether it's the Royals, the Chiefs, the KU basketball team. I guess it doesn't really happen to them. But any other program, when things get as bad as 1-5, that locker room can really go south quickly.
Right.
And you can have guys start thinking about themselves, thinking about transferring, whatever it may be. And all of a sudden, you've got chemistry issues. You've got guys pulling the rope in different directions. I give Barry Odom full credit for being able to go through that 1-5 stretch and being able to keep this team together, break out against Idaho, continue it against UConn, and then the last 2 weeks, however bad Florida and Tennessee are, and they're absolutely bad, they did exactly what an average to above average team should do against both Florida and Tennessee. So I think Barry Odom does deserve some credit for that. The one thing, though, to be on the lookout for, next year's Mizzou schedule is very tough. I mean, their SEC road games, if you take a look at the 2018 schedule, they've got, like, at Alabama. They travel to all the tough road destinations in the SEC East. It's a tough schedule. So Mizzou could very well end up being a better team next year and still have a 7-5 or 8-4 type of mark on the season.
Hey, we always appreciate the update. That was good stuff, and we appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks so much for having me on. Appreciate it, guys.
Brandon Kiley, ESPN 101 in St. Louis, joining us on the program.